Hello, and welcome to the Dr. Nurse Mama Show, prescribing hope for healthy families here on American Family Radio. Here's your host, Professor, Pediatric Nurse Practitioner, and Mom of Four, Dr. Jessica Peck.
Well, hey there, friends, and welcome to my favorite part of the afternoon, getting to spend some time with you, prescribing hope for healthy families. We need hope in today's world, and we're going to endeavor to find it. And listen, we seem to be in an unintended little theme here of talking to a lot of dads. And that's so great because dads are so important today, and men leading in ministry. And yesterday, we had a great conversation with Jeremy Carroll about flipping the script and why traditions and practices that we've had in ministering to kids in church are just all of a sudden seem like they're not working anymore, and the world is changing faster than we can keep up with it. But the good news is that the one thing that doesn't change is the truth that we know is found in Jesus Christ being the same yesterday, today, and forever. And that is a truth that future generations need to know, that they can build their house upon that rock of that truth. And we're really going to be kind of continuing that theme today with my guest, Rich Griffith. Now, Rich, as I shared with you, is a dad. He has three sons. He has a doctor of ministry degree. He's an associate professor of youth ministry at, I hope I'm saying this right, Rich, Toccoa? Is that right? Toccoa Falls College?
Toccoa Falls.
I got it right. Yay. Okay. Toccoa Falls College. He also serves as a part-time pastor, and he writes, he speaks, he hosts a podcast. He's on the board of the Association of Youth Ministry Educators. And today we're going to be talking about his book called Voices, Helping Our Children and Youth Listen to Wise Counsel. We really need this message. Rich, welcome to the show. We're so glad to have you here.
Thank you for having me, Jessica. It's a pleasure.
Well, you know, I think back to when we were growing up, Rich, and when we were listening to different voices, there really were not a lot of choices. If you went to church with your family, yes, you may hear that pastor. You probably were going to have one teacher. In your home, you might have had the Encyclopedia Britannica or the back of the cereal box is what I would read. But, you know, what we're looking at now is a world where we have information overload. Kids have so many options for so many voices. And if you look at some of the statistics on that, it's estimated there are 300 hours of content uploaded to YouTube every minute. How are they supposed to know which voices to listen to? And if you hear a voice, say your parents' voice or your pastor's voice, and they say something, and then you go to YouTube and you can hear people that look so credible, that look like they have it all together. They look really attractive and their message is desirable. And they're telling you, hey, your parents don't know what they're talking about. They're old. This is the new way of doing things. They can easily find an echo chamber. It's terrifying. So that's what we're going to talk about. But before we dive into that, Rich, just tell us a little bit about your story, how you came to know the Lord and to be called into this ministry.
Sure. Well, it's interesting. I did not grow up in what you would consider a practicing Christian home. My parents were good people and moral. We had our own dysfunctions like every family does. I know when I was younger, you know, my mom would put us on a bus to go to a local church, but I think that was primarily to get her young children out of her hair. But through a series of circumstances in middle school, I had some friends who started sharing the Lord with me, and it takes me a little while. So when I was 16, I basically came to the Lord more out of fire insurance, but didn't want to go to hell. But at 17, I really understood I wanted to follow Christ out of love because he first loved us, right? And it was at that point I asked the Lord, what do you want me to do with my life? You know, that's the point in teenage adolescent. You're in that identity formation process. And I felt a clear call at that time, it was youth ministry. And it was validated through so many circumstances I can't even get into, but just had years of fruitful ministry after that. And don't get me wrong, there were lots of challenges. But when other people started affirming that call, and then even being 18 years old and being in the military and serving, a chapel youth ministry was only the Lord could orchestrate that. So I spent some time working with a ministry called Young Life and just kind of been going in that route for many years. And that call has been affirmed in many ways. Now it's expressed itself now as a college professor and a little differently, but I still stay involved in youth ministry, and God has been really good. And the beauty of all this is I've been able to lead my entire family to Christ. So it's been, everything else is icing on the cake, really.
Well, that is so encouraging to hear. And, you know, it's amazing. We actually have spoken with many people who have been in the military. And I think I've heard this old saying, you know, there are no atheists in foxholes. And I think that, mm-hmm. you know, it really is amazing to see God at work in that way and using that. And really, when mm-hmm. we're looking at fighting for the heart mm-hmm. of Gen Z and Gen mm-hmm. Alpha today, there are a lot of parallels mm-hmm. because, you know, we talk, Rich, a lot about culture wars and what we're fighting against. But I say, yes, mm-hmm. we can't lose sight of what we're fighting for. And we're fighting for Absolutely. Their hearts. We're fighting for yeah. their souls. You know, we really are. And I was really touched, Rich, because when I opened up your book and read the very first page, the very first mm-hmm. quote in here is from mm-hmm. your son, Jamie. And I'm going to share it with our listeners. Mm-hmm. And he says, "Before I was adopted, my biological family did not give good input into my life. In fact, the opposite is true. They would have me shoplift or be a lookout during drug deals. Then I was removed from my family and put into foster care, where I started hearing from wise voices. My dad, Miss Harriet, and church gave me a new and wiser voices to listen to. Over time, I learned to trust because I discovered adults who are honest with me, who love me and care about me. I am not perfect, but at least I know what it means to listen to wisdom. I am becoming a more confident person." Rich, that put tears in my eyes. And I think that, you know, when I sometimes I'll get pushback on some of the things that I say, but I think that sometimes, and especially in church world, we operate from the assumption that, oh, everybody has great parents who are invested and who care, and that's the solution. That's not the case for every kid. But tell us a little bit about your journey in fatherhood and how that's influenced your ministry and heart for Gen Z.
Yeah, sure. Actually, I got teary-eyed just hearing that again myself.
Beautiful.
Three boys out of the system. Yeah, it is fascinating. And that's the redemptive work of God the Father, right? He loves us enough to care for us, even in the hardest times, and then to redeem those stories. I did not set out to be an adoptive dad, particularly being single. I was overseas doing some consulting, and I came across James 1:27, and it just kind of hit me between the eyes, and I did a 4-year sort of Jonah experience of running from God. And long story short, there were just, again, circumstances and people that God put in my life that they just said, yes, you need to do this. And so now, honestly, it's been the hardest but the most rewarding thing I've ever done. And so I just stopped fighting after a while. And frankly, while it's been a challenge, it has made me a much better person in understanding the heart of God the Father. And I jokingly say now, I really thought I was a really good youth pastor until I became a parent, and then I realized I didn't know Jack Diddley. So my kids have taught me a lot in the way of patience and the heart of the Father. And one of the things I realized is there's so many of us who walk around as Christians with imposter syndrome. We don't feel like we're good enough for God. And yet the problem is, if we lean into our brokenness and we keep hearing those lies, then we don't lean into the love of God. But it's the love of God that has conquered all those things, all of our past, all of our sin, all of our mistakes, especially the ones that have been placed on us. So yeah, it's really impacted my ministry, how I see God the Father, how that comes played out to have a heart for generations, intergenerational ministry. And my children, being a parent, is the primary reason for that.
I felt the same way when I was a nurse practitioner. Before I had kids, I thought, oh yeah, you know, I'm compassionate, I'm understanding. And, you know, after I had kids, I'm like weeping with these families saying, I'll be over at 6 to make you a lasagna and rock your baby. You know, I mean, it just really does change your perspective. Yeah. But, you know, I want to dive into some tough things here, Rich, and some of the things that you've talked about, because in paying attention to the voices speaking into this generation, we, you know, talked yesterday a lot about the identity and how this generation is just looking for identity and has so much competition. We talked about that with Jeremy. You have talked about systemic and systematic abandonment of this generation, which even from reading your son's brief quote, he has experienced. So this is real and personal. What do you mean by that?
Well, every institution that is supposed to be driven by nurturing our young people has pretty much been hijacked by adult-driven agendas. And that's systemic. It's not intentional. It's not like, and I get this from Dr. Chuck Clark, who was with Fuller Seminary, and he was my doctoral reader. And no adult wakes up, no leader of an organization, a youth organization, wakes up and says, let's see how we can hurt kids today, right? That's Chap's words. But how we've seen this come into play for systemic, non-intentional, and I'm going to start with some of the easier ones, too. And listen, we need to pray for our public educators because they really are on this front line. But when you get things in school like zero tolerance policies, right, that came out of the 90s school shootings and stuff like that, which are a horrible thing, there's still a statistical anomaly. So what happened is we started putting school resource officers in this public school. A couple of years ago, the school resource officer was the fastest growing line of police work in America. Now, what's interesting about this is we follow from the 90s on up. The United States has the highest rate of incarcerated juveniles than any other industrialized nation in the world, including Russia and China. Now, again, this wasn't intentional, but it came about because what used to be a phone call between a school administrator and a parent now becomes a phone call between a school resource officer and a parent. Give you a perfect example of this, of systemic. And this bleeds into systematic, which means intentional. Here's what I mean by this. So, for instance, I know our schools have an incredible issue with vaping. But the problem is you have people who are making these vape products, marketing it, making it appealing to children and youth, and even to parents who are saying, oh, look, my teenager started smoking. It's a horrible habit. It's bad for them. So it was sold, vaping was sold as healthier. So parents, well-meaning parents or other people would get a hold of these vape products. What they weren't telling parents is that the vape product had 10 times the nicotine than a cigarette. And then they're marketing it with, you know, fruit flavors and things like that. The problem is our kids get addicted to it. And instead of helping kids get out of that, you know, our schools start suspending or worse, expelling kids. And this falls under the zero tolerance policy. Which, again, there's this whole that to me, the vaping thing is a systematic, intentional. We're more concerned about bottom line and making money. And then the systemic is the suspensions and things which really hinder a kid's graduation. So that's just school, but every institution has examples of this.
Well, you know, that is something that is happening here in Texas. There's been a lot of conversation about some legislators who were very well intended and recognized that vaping is a problem. And much as I've written about this a lot, actually, in my book, Behind Closed Doors, because there's a conversation to be had about whether or not it is a safe alternative for adults, because vaping or electronic cigarettes were actually most widely attributed to a pharmacist in China who watched his dad die of lung cancer. And so he thought that was this. But, you know, now we see kids who are having it. The legislators want to do something about it. But actually, this was a story I was just looking at from the Dallas Morning News that hundreds of North Texas students were sent to disciplinary alternative schools because a new law requires that there's zero tolerance. The first time they're caught with something, they're sent. And, you know, I'll tell you, Rich, there are so many new threats that kids are encountering these days. We really need to have that conversation of what requires punishment and what requires some counseling and what requires some more education. So, well, we are just getting started in this conversation. When we come back, here's a teaser for our listeners. We're going to talk about gerontophobia and ephebophobia. Okay. You're probably thinking, what even is that? Well, if you hang around, We'll tell you when you come back. We'll see you on the other side of this break. More with Rich Griffith, author of the book Voices, helping our children and youth listen to wise counsel. A recent study reports that the rapidly declining global birth rate will lead to a major population crisis if birth rates continue to decline. Their massive support for Planned Parenthood is all part of their plan. While we may feel hopeless in the constant attack on life, there's an amazing way to fight back. When they shout abortion, we shout life. Preborn is leading the way. Every day, their network rescues 200 babies. You see, when a mother meets her baby on ultrasound and hears the heartbeat, a baby's chance at life doubles. The ultrasound is the secret weapon that joins a mother's heart to her child. Preborn provides ultrasounds for clinics in the highest abortion areas. Can we join hands nationwide for life? One ultrasound is just $28, but any gift will help. $5,000 underwrites ultrasounds for the entire network for a day. All gifts are tax deductible. To donate, dial #250 and say the keyword baby. That's #250, baby, or visit preborn.com/AFR. That's preborn.com/AFR.
Who can bend my burdens and make them beautiful? Who can bring the healing to the hurt I hold? Who else could part the waters when I'm needed away? Though I'm walking through the valley, I believe when you say, I believe when you say, for the good, you work all things together. For the good, you promise.
Welcome back, friends, and thank the Lord that He does work all things for good for those who love Him and are called according to His purpose. And I know that you all are listening and we are looking and saying, okay, God, what Satan intends for evil, what the enemy intends for evil, you intend for our good. And that is the message that we need to give this generation. We've been talking to Rich Griffith, author of the book Voices, helping our children and youth listen to wise counsel. And I think, you know, that's one of the most frustrating things, Rich, for parents today that I'm hearing, and grandparents who think, I have so much wisdom to offer. I can help you with this. I see this. But what kids see is that adults really don't understand the way the world is changing. And they're just kind of left to navigate it on their own, because we get frustrated with some of these things. We think, I don't want to have this conversation. I don't want to talk about vaping and rainbow fentanyl and, you know, all of these things. Like, let's just say no. And this is what you need to do. But if we want to influence the worldview of this generation, we have got to see the world as they see it so that we can guide them to where they need to go. Well, let's just dive right back in, Rich. We were talking before about systemic versus systematic abandonment, which you gave a great example, and there are many. But you also talk about the difference between independence, codependence, and interdependence, and the importance of having multiple generations involved in kids' lives. Tell us about this.
Yeah, we are told as parents, you know, our role is to raise healthy, independent children, but that's really not true. The fact of the matter is we know codependency is wrong. We have an independent to the point of narcissistic culture, right? You do you, that kind of philosophy. Jeremy did a great job, again, talking about that yesterday. But what we really need to be teaching is interdependence, which means our actions impact each other. Our worldviews impact each other. And so one of the things we need to do is, and we'll talk probably a little more about this, we need to move away from doing just church and family to church as family. But let me go back into this a little bit.
Yeah.
The reason this is so key, and I think the church is the one who brings the solution. I'll be honest with you, I wrestled with all these things, and I'm like, but I don't know how to address this, just this iceberg mountainous problem, right? So this is what led to a lot of these things. Of research and just writing, how do we as a church, how do we as parents address this? And part of that is we have to have more interdependence. We have to have more intentional intergenerational ministry. And so a lot of churches will talk about how they're multi-generational, but that just means every church, just about every church, has multi-generations coming together. But mm-hmm. that's not the same as intentionally, intergenerationally interacting. So that the problem is we separate our wisdom and our experience from the energy and new ideas. So in other words, we separate our children go here on Sunday morning, our youth go to another location, our adults go to another, our seniors to another. We're one of the most segregated institutions in America. And what this has led to is a sense of what I would call generational entitlement. But what it's also led to is this growing, you alluded to it before the break, gerontophobia and ephebophobia. Ephebophobia is simply the fear of young people. Gerontophobia is the fear of gerontophobia, the fear of older people. We know this. We see in our culture there is ageism. There is this worship of youth. There's, you know, how many times you hear about the worship culture wars? Well, we need to sing hymns, or, well, we need to sing praise music. Well, we actually need to do both for multiple generations when we come together. And what I've told folks is the reason we have ephebophobia and gerontophobia is we only fear what we do not know. And the reason we do not know is because we've segregated and separated. We don't take time to get to know each other. And our young people are looking for people who will just listen. And like you said, begin to be willing to understand their worldview. The world is different. Cultural change is happening 5 to 7 years now. It's not a 20-year age gap, generation gap. It's 5 to 7 years. That's how rapidly culture is changing.
It absolutely is. And we don't have to understand everything, but we do have to listen. And that's what they want. And I'm just going to give our listeners a heads up. They know, Rich, we have been recovering from Hurricane Beryl. And so there still is a lot of recovery effort going on around the studio. We do not want to stop that. So if you hear those noises, just bear with us as we are trying to still get back to normal, make sure everybody has air conditioning. But, you know, Rich, this is such a thing that I see, this gerontophobia and ephebophobia, like you talked about, because I see young people who really have a disrespect and disregard for older people because they think, you don't understand what I'm going through. You don't care what I'm going through. You're telling me this is a terrible time to be alive. I'm lazy. I'm a snowflake. But then we see those adults who have that ephebophobia too, like, oh, this generation is nuts. They have lost their mind, you know? And so I see that such a loss of rich relationships there. And just because older generations, you know, even me and Gen X, there are so many things my kids face that I think this did not even exist. I mean, we didn't even have an iPad until 2010. That's how quickly the world has changed. But it's really interesting to me what you're talking about with the separation that's happening in churches where everybody's just kind of doing their own thing instead of really ministering to each other. How many times do you see older people whose faces just light up when young people come around, or older people who think, oh my goodness, this is younger people. When older people talk to them, they put their phone down. They actually have eye contact. They have social skills that they haven't seen before. So I want to go back to this concept. You've just mentioned the church and family versus the church as family. How do we integrate that into our churches?
Yeah, the fascinating thing, I'm not saying either or, I think it has to be both. So church and family tends to be typically geared toward more of your traditional nuclear families, which is a great thing. We need that. But if you look statistically, the number of non-traditional or permeable families is increasing. I'm a non-traditional family. I'm a single dad with 3 adopted sons. And so what I need is I need church to function as church as family. I can't tell you the number of single parents, grandparents who are reparenting because all the damage that is going on in our culture, right? There are so many different family structures there that when they go to church, because church is primarily church and family, they feel like a fifth wheel. So what this does is this further ostracizes even a more segment of our culture who really people who want to follow Christ, but they want to do it as a family and bring family supports like Miss Harriet in the book, right? Miss Harriet is my youngest son's adoptive godgrandmother, for lack of a better word. And I'm telling you, if it wasn't for my church as family, oh, it would have been so hard to be a single parent. And so I think what I'm trying to say is let's stop looking at just nuclear families and let's start functioning theologically like Jesus said, who is my mother and my brother and my sister? They're the ones who do the will of God. And so I think this is really important for us to get away from fear programming and affinity ages. We need to have some of that, but we also need to be more intentional about intergenerational and different family models, hearing the gospel and living the gospel together. Does that make sense?
Well, it does. I think what you're saying is that the reality is for a lot of families, and especially families who need church support, much like you've described your own, it's just not the, it's not the reality. What we see as God's design for the family, that's not their reality that they're living. And you do have a section dedicated to young people who feel like their voice isn't trusted, and their parents are not trustworthy. You know, their parents may be harming them from either an intentional purpose or just because of being hurt themselves and being stuck in a cycle. What encouragement do you have for those kids? How can we, as other caring voices in their life, be aware of that need? Because sometimes, you know, when I hear all of this dialogue going on about the lack of parent rights, which is definitely concerning, I am not discounting that at all. Please hear me say that loud and clear. But I wonder what other kids think when they think, yeah, my parent is abusive. My parent is neglectful. My parent is gone. I've never even known them. How do we help them connect with trustworthy voices? Because for those who have parents who are wanting to be engaged, and there are so many of those, Rich, who write into me or call into the show and they say, I want to be this for my kid. How can I do that? What do you say to the kids that don't have that advocate? How can we reach them?
Yeah, I would encourage them to, you know, especially, this is why I say, I think the church is the best suited organization to actually meet these needs, because we are loving people with the love of Christ. And so I think what I encourage young people to do is, this is going to take a little bravery on their part, and it really shouldn't be this way. I mean, our young people should not have to ask for people to mentor them, or what I call Christian nurture. But if you're a young person struggling, maybe because I didn't grow up in a Christian home. I had to have other people mentor me and disciple me in ways that I wasn't getting at home. I would encourage our young people, look, reach out to your church, start with your youth pastor, start with your pastor, you know, ask them, is there someone who you would trust to maybe spend a little time with me mentoring? Now, a lot of people honestly get freaked out by the term mentor. But what I try and encourage the elder folks in our church is, see it as Christian nurture. Can you Christian encourage a young person, and just spend time with them listening? Go grab a Coke, do whatever you need to do. But I want to encourage our young people to be involved in the life of the church and find that family that maybe they're missing. But also don't give up with your family, because it took me 20 years of prayer to lead my family to Christ, but God is faithful, and that's a promise we can rely on.
You just said my two favorite words in the history of ever, Rich, but God. Those are the best stories for sure. And, you know, I think there's a lot of people who think, well, I don't have kids, or, you know, my kids are grown, but those are the best kinds of mentors, because you have time. And I think about someone like my father-in-law. You know, he came to know the Lord actually through his son, through my husband, and he has served as a mentor in a school program. And I'm talking fourth and fifth grade kids, and he goes and meets with them once a week and just listens to them, just communicates care. And many of these kids, you know, he's developed relationships with their family. They come to church with him. They've been able to connect them to resources. I mean, there's just so much that you can do. So I'm speaking to all the retired people out there who think, I have a little time on my hands and I have some wisdom to share. This is a great way to do it. And one of the things I want to talk about that you talk in the book about is the three T's: time, transparency, and trust. So let's take each of those. I want to walk through this, because parents a lot of times think, oh, kids don't want to spend time with adults. They want to be with their friends. Well, they do want to be with their friends, but they want time. I say this all the time, Rich, you know, like if your kid is being difficult and then all of a sudden they come up to you and they're like, "Hey, Mom, how are you doing?" You think, what do you want? Do you want money? Like, but our kids feel the same way about us. When we're like, you know, busy and we're just in business mode and we're going and going. And then all of a sudden, like we have this little love bubble in our heart and we think, oh, I have, you know, some time. And we say, oh, come and talk to me. And then they don't, you know, we think that. So talk about that myth of time, that kids do want our time more than anything else.
Yeah, I think especially as a single parent, you know, I'm a single parent, I'm a full-time professor, part-time pastor. I do other consulting, writing, all the things we mentioned at the beginning of the program. But one of the things I think we do is we've overcomplicated so much. My confession is I spent so many years discipling other people's kids, I didn't know how to disciple my own. And so one of the things I had to look at is, where do I invest my time? And so I think we think about, oh, we got to take these hours out of the day and stuff. But I want to talk about what kids, and you know this, as a pediatric person who works, nurse, doctor, you know that the thing that they need the most is consistency, right?
Yes.
So one of the things we do is 5:30 every day, and there are a few exceptions, but we put our phones up, and 5:30 every day is dinner. And that is a time to sit around and have conversation about how our day went, what are the highs, what are the lows, what's good, what's bad. I also use, for the most part, when I'm taking my son to school or picking him up from school, we have conversations in the truck. We call it truck time, right? And it's where we also do some of our discipleship. So I think the part about it, it's like everything in life, just like the intergenerationality, it has to be intentional. We just have to say, just like we should take a Sabbath, right? This is the time we carve out. We make sure nothing else interferes with it. There are times in our day we just need to say, for an hour at dinner time, for instance, we're going to have conversation. We might go through some scripture, but we're going to have dinner. Our phones are up. And just that consistency, kids really do want to hear. You know, our culture is really good about dividing, and the best way they have learned to divide families is to interfere so much with their time. It's the greatest gift we can give our children.
I agree. I'm going to hold you right there because we're already up against another break. But you are absolutely... I know. Can you believe that? It is so true. Our time is our most valuable commodity, and that's what our kids want. And you know, Rich, in a world that is so unpredictable, where anything goes, where there are no moral standards, where anything can happen, kids need that consistency more than any time. And it's almost like you've been doing our 52 Habits for Healthy Families, Rich. I feel like that. But when we come back, I want to talk about transparency. And the first sentence of this paragraph is, we live in a society where charisma often trumps character. That's where we're going to go. We'll be right back with Rich Griffith, author of Voices. See you on the other side of this break.
We live in a day when America's families are under attack like never before.
Buddy Smith, Senior Vice President of the American Family Association.
The war against biblical principles rages on numerous fronts. The internet, Hollywood, Washington, D.C., America's corporate boardrooms, and the list goes on. At American Family Association, we're committed to standing against the enemies of God, the enemies of your family. And we recognize it's an impossible task without God's favor and your partnership. Thank you for being faithful to pray for this ministry, to give financially, and to respond to our calls for activism. What you do on the home front is crucial to what we do on the battlefront. We praise God for your faithfulness, and may He give us many victories in the battles ahead as we work together to restore our nation's biblical foundations.
I've nothing else fit for a king.
Welcome back, friends. That song is Gratitude by Brandon Lake. And if you've been listening in since the beginning of the year, you know gratitude is one of our healthy habits, and it can really transform your attitude and your heart in a physical sense as well as a spiritual sense. And we, in this day and age, when it just seems like there is so much to be afraid of and so much to be angry about, we need to make sure that we are obeying the mandate in Scripture that in everything, give thanks by prayer and supplication. Present your request to Jesus, and the peace of God, which transcends all understanding, will guard your heart and your mind in Christ Jesus. And we need our hearts and our minds guarded. We are talking with Rich Griffith, the author of Voices, helping our children and youth listen to wise counsel. And Rich, before the break, we were talking about time, which is so important. If you want to be a leading voice in your child's life, there is no easy way. You have got to put in the time being physically, mentally, and emotionally present in your child's life. I've talked about that. But the thing I want to dive into now is transparency. So let me go back to what you have written in this book, because I think this is really true. Unfortunately, we live in a society where charisma often trumps character. Unfortunately, many people who are attractive, speak well, yield influence, and display charisma, but lack character, are often the people who find themselves engaging in unethical or immoral behaviors. A charismatic person who lacks character can be a great manipulator. And it is only through spending time with that person you begin to see their true character, and people who lack character also lack transparency. The problem with influencers online that our kids are listening to is that they really don't know them in a sense. They don't spend time with them in a sense. And then it seems like everybody in their age group jumps on the bandwagon and, you know, declares, oh, this is a good person to follow. And you look at it and you think, no, this is terribly unhealthy. So talk about transparency as one of your three T's that you're putting here together for us.
Yeah, I think it's true, again, that the more time you spend with somebody, you really get to know their heart and their character. And so my encouragement to parents is, you know, at age-appropriate levels, be honest with your kids. Be appropriately transparent. You don't have to tell them all the horrible things you did as a teenager as you were growing up. But for instance, for my kids coming out of the system, and I try not to get emotional when I talk about these things, but I think I was the only first adult to ever look them in the face and say, I am sorry, I made a mistake. And I want to model that for them. I want them to know that, you know, there are adults who will be honest with them, who will care about them, who will tell them the truth, even if they make a mistake, and own up to it. We actually have some rules in our house. Our rules are, you're going to make mistakes. So the first rule is, if you make a mistake, just own up to it. Boy, aren't we lacking that in our culture today?
But absolutely. Own up to it.
Apologize for it. Make it right if you can. Learn from it. And the last one is really important. Grow from it. Just grow from it. And if you do that and you're transparent with each other, I mean, how many times do we go into church and we're not transparent, right? People ask the question all the time, oh, how you doing? What's our automatic response? Oh, I'm doing fine. Well, yeah, and I'm not saying we have to put everything out there, but, you know, as a pastor, there have been times, I don't know, I'm sure people can relate, going to church, you know, my family has had arguments, and I'm the pastor, and I'm supposed to preach a
you
sermon.
You don't say. Oh, my goodness.
I know, it's horrible,
shocking.
Right?
Yes.
And I've even told my sons, I said, look, I want to make sure I'm doing everything I'm doing, even the book. I want to do it with integrity. I want to do it with transparency. So if I've made mistakes or I've had an argument with my sons and I'm about to preach, I've literally gotten in front of my congregation because we're family. And I will say, look, we just had a really rough morning this morning. The sermon may not be the greatest, or I may even preach about what happened and say how I need forgiveness, but that's transparency. Mm. And that's what we need to have in our churches and in our family. We just need to be honest. So that's where, you know, a lot of influencers, they're called influencers for a reason. They, you know, I see this in the church world. We lift up, you know, the pastors who have thousands in their congregations, only to find out later that they were very ungracious to their staff, or they were caught in sexual sin or things like that. I'd love to go to a church conference where, you know, there's been a pastor who's been serving faithfully 50 people for 30 years. And yet, what does that take for persistence and faithfulness and hearing those stories of those families change? Sorry, that's a little off script, but I think that's what transparency is requiring.
I think so, too. And one of the concepts that I appreciated you talking about is teaching our kids to keep a confidence, the difference between that and keeping a secret. And we actually, we have a rule in our family that we do not have secrets. There is no whispering. Right. There are no secrets. Now, there are some things that are sensitive, some things that are confidential, you know, some things that, you know, maybe my daughters are going to talk to me and they wouldn't want to talk to their dad about, just like you have Miss Harriet, you know, and sometimes that can happen. But when we see secrecy really does pervade a lot of these digital relationships because they're not very transparent. It's very private. Right. And when kids are chatting with each other and those kinds of things, you know, that can be difficult. So talk about the difference between keeping a secret and keeping a confidence.
Yeah, I think I learned this through years of youth ministry. You know, you'd always have kids that come from hurting backgrounds and they would say to their grow group leader or myself as a pastor, and they would say, hey, I need to talk to you. Can you keep a secret, right? And I had to learn, and our leaders had to learn to say,
no.
I won't keep a secret. I will, exactly, right? I will keep a confidence. But what this means is no matter what you tell me, I am committed to walk through this situation with you. Because there are certain things. If a kid has been abused, of course, I need to report that to DFACS. But I'm not going to do that and just, you know, do it and not commit to walking through that situation with a kid. And that again comes into the time and transparency, right? So those two elements are in that building confidence. It is a confidence thing, right? That I know this adult, I can trust them to have my best interest at heart. And so that's that third filter that comes in is just the trust capacity. Mm-hmm. You know, I look at the worst example of social media, right? So does social media give you time? No, it takes time. It takes your time away. It steals time, right? Is it transparent? Well, I almost laugh saying that because we know.
It's fake.
Social media is not transparent, right, at all, right? And so my question is to young people, well, if it steals your time, if it's not honest and transparent, why would you trust it? Right. So all the relationships I talk about in the book can run through these three systems and or filters: time, transparency, trust. And I think that's what I'm calling our young people back to, is to say there are adults face to face who want to spend time with you, who are going to be honest with you, who you can build trust with, that really want your best interest at heart. So I think that's where it comes into even, you know, not keeping a secret, but having confidence that kids know that no matter what happens in life, they always have somebody in their corner. And of course, we hope that always starts at the home first.
You know, I always told my kids that you are never to keep a secret. And they would say that if their friend would say, hey, can you keep a secret? They would say exactly this. I do not keep any secrets from my parents. So anything you tell me, if I'm concerned about, I just want you to know, I talk about that with my parents. And so many times when we see oversharing or trauma dumping, kids are now absorbing things that they are not developmentally prepared to absorb. And
absolutely,
so they need to have some of these voices in their life who are following the Lord, who are trustworthy, who are not going to harm them, who are models of integrity, and that they know they'll be safe with. That's so important. And my goodness, Rich, our time just feels like it is like the hourglass on the Wizard of Oz here. I feel like it's going so fast.
Yeah.
But let's chapter 2 and 3, you contrast two concepts. You have big, quiet voices and small, loud voices. Can you tell us what the contrast is and how they're competing for the hearts and minds of kids today?
Sure. The best way I could do it is I talk about Elijah, right, and how God reveals himself to Elijah. He's not in the wind. He's not in the earthquake. He's not in the fire. He's in that whisper, and Elijah knows that God is speaking to him. And I do this exercise with kids. I'm like, when I'm at a conference speaking with people, I'm like, so I want you to close your eyes, and I want you to imagine that you're hearing your parents talk to you in a whisper. Can you hear it? And they inevitably know they hear that voice. They hear that quiet voice, right, that they know they can trust. Compared to, and I got the loud voice, small, loud voice, out of a retiring preacher who, once you retire, you can pretty much say whatever you want. And so in this large crowd of people, he said, and this is so profound, he says, "Have you ever noticed that the most noise comes from the shallow end of the pool?" And I thought, man, that is deep and rich, just really good. So chapter two talks about the five voices that actually a young person should be able to listen to. And each chapter has some questions about, well, how well are we doing over this? And it's going to sound strange, but actually the last voice that I mentioned here is teaching people how to listen to the voice of God. Well, why would it be last? Because our worldview, our perspective of God is often shaped by the voices that come before, you know, mm-hmm. our parents, our grandparents, our mentors, the church. And, you know, we talk about diversity and a biblical diversity about the church around the world. The smaller voices really are those, and I was questionable on peers. I think as parents, we need to monitor our kids' peers, because I've seen a lot of good kids go down the wrong path because they just started getting involved with. But, you know, you got peer influence relationship, then you got consumerism. Boy, that is a big thing. We could spend an hour just on consumerism and social media. And then the last one, of course, is the voice of culture. Now, there are things we can learn from them, but it does not mean that they are the healthiest voices we need to be listening to. So that was kind of it in a quick synopsis, because I know we're running out of time, and I hopefully folks will read the book and get better information than that quick synopsis.
I know, but it is, and I do encourage people to read it and to consider the voices that are speaking mm-hmm. into this generation, because I think what yeah. we're missing there is an intentionality. You know, honestly, Rich, life yes. is going mm-hmm. at the speed of a smartphone, and we're just kind of trying mm-hmm. to go on a wing and a prayer, and like thinking, okay, yeah. you know, hey, we're going to yeah. try to do our best. We're going to church. We're trying to spend some mm-hmm. family time mm-hmm. together, and we're just going to hope that everything works out. But, you know, I always mm-hmm. say parenting is actually really easy. But parenting well is one of the hardest things that you will ever do. And I think in looking at some of these small, loud voices, especially the voice of social media, the voice of influencer, I mean, those things are the voice of culture. I mean, really, yeah. it is winning in a way that we have not seen in my yeah. lifetime. I mean, that is what's happening because it's so compelling. And, you know, Rich, when I look at the voices that kids are hearing, so I will give an example of something I see a lot of kids struggling with is sexting or sextortion or sending explicit images to each other. Culture is giving a message like, oh, you're so beautiful. You're so brave. Right. You look so amazing. Yeah. And we're giving a message like, how could you be so stupid? That is trashy. That is disgusting. And, you know, I'm not saying that it's right at all, but I'm just saying that the voices there are so important. Well, as we close our time together, Rich, because we could go on for another hour for sure. What are some practical ways we can disciple our children as we go? Yeah. You talk about that verse in Deuteronomy, as we walk along the road, yeah. as we're getting up, as we're lying down. What are some practical ways you can encourage our parents?
Sure. Well, the good news is I actually have a whole section on that in the back of the book, actually called Ways to Disciple Your Children as You Go. I think the most practical thing we have to do, and the other thing about the small voices is, let's stop making it complicated, right? Let's focus on the relationship, not the programs. Let's focus on how do we talk to our children about God? How do we talk about the things that He has done in our life and encourage them to explore that on their own? And so that has to be done in community. It has to be done not just in the home. It has to be done in a collaboration with the church. It has to be done even in collaboration of Christian community. And so we have to set that up. We are all responsible for discipling our children. And so I would say start small. Don't feel like you have to do these big, victorious things, right? Just even if it's the breakfast table, the dinner table, whatever it is, like your habits, right? I love that you guys teach your listeners about habits. Find a habit that works for you. And, you know, once that's ingrained a little bit, then look for the next habit. And, you know, surround yourself with other families who are going to be that encouragement to you, because we need discipleship. And we're not just putting it one way to our children. Discipleship is sort of like the cyclical thing that we all go through and we all benefit from.
I agree, Rich. And some of the other things you have is developing a family mission statement and praying with intention. Yes. There's a family video prayer journal, which I love, having each family member choose a life verse. We've done that in my family, doing a regular family game night, all of these things that are just so synergistic with what we're saying. Well, listen, parents, if you want to know more about those voices, you can get Rich's book, Voices, Helping Our Children and Youth. Listen to wise counsel. May the Lord bless you and keep you and make His face shine on you. And I'll see you right here tomorrow, prescribing more help for healthy families.
The views and opinions expressed in this broadcast may not necessarily reflect those of the American Family Association or American Family Radio.